This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Everyone from environmental organizations to President Obama have touted the benefits of natural gas as an environmentally friendlier fossil fuel. The basis of that support comes from the fact that natural gas burns more cleanly than coal or oil. But the majority of natural gas that is produced these days comes from the controversial practice of hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, an invasive and disruptive process that results in methane leaks, groundwater pollution, and even earthquakes. Communities reeling from the devastation wrought by fracking have risen up against it all over the world. Chronicling that battle in her new book is my guest, Winona Hauter. She is an author, an activist, founder, and executive director of Food and Water Watch. Her earlier book was entitled Foodopoly, The Battle Over the Future of Food and Farming in America. She now joins me to discuss her brand new book, Fracopoly, The Battle for the Future of Energy and the Environment. Welcome to the show, Winona.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, it seems as though these days, you know, there are communities all over the country, small towns here and there, all the way to the state of New York, that are battling major oil companies and government to say no to fracking. But the practice of fracking itself still, I think, is not clearly understood. How do you explain, you know, when you have President Obama saying that natural gas is the way forward if we want to save our climate, how do you explain why fracking is such a terrible approach to energy consumption?
Well, first of all, I think you have to understand what fracking is. And one of the facts that people aren't aware of is that 80% of fracking that has gone on in recent years has actually been for oil, although natural gas, of course, is also fracked. So fracking is basically a set of technologies that were developed and implemented since 2000. It involves taking a host of toxic chemicals, up to 600 different ones can be used, mixing it with millions of gallons of water, up to 13 million gallons in some parts of Texas, and mixing it with sand, and then under high pressure, drilling deep underground about a mile and using the pressure to send the sand and water and chemical mixture down to basically cause an explosion underground to fracture rock to allow gas and oil to escape. So it's a very radical process. It takes place very deep underground. Usually the drilling goes as much as a mile vertically and then as much as 2 miles horizontally. And it's actually in the horizontal frack zone that this high pressure explosion takes place. And it can happen in one of the areas where they're drilling up to 10 or 12 times in a certain well. Now, one of the things that happens is that they're going very, very deep underground. And so it also dislodges a lot of radioactive materials. And with all of that fracking water being used, a big percentage of that water comes back up to the surface. And that's one of the areas that we're seeing a lot of the spills and the problems with people's local water being polluted. And we've also seen earthquakes because one of the methods that they use to dispose of this wastewater is deep well and disposal, where they send it very deep underground, and it's causing earthquakes in a number of states like Oklahoma. The other thing that happens, the water pollution actually happens with the fracking. There's well casing problems and a number of things that cause methane to pollute surface water and the aquifers. So there's a lot of evidence about this, but there's a lot of money that is being used to keep our federal government from doing what it should to protect people and their health.
So many issues there that I want to tackle one at a time. Let's first talk about the water issue. The fracking companies say, we're going to take all of the water and pump it right back deep into the ground where it won't harm anybody. How do they claim that that isn't going to impact groundwater sources? And where, you know, what sort of evidence do we have that people's groundwater is literally being tainted by the chemicals that are being pumped back into the ground?
Well, the fracking process itself often pollutes groundwater because there are a lot of shortcuts taken by the oil and gas industry, and a lot of problems that naturally occur when you are developing a well, building the casing around it, and often the methane and the chemicals leak into groundwater and sometimes into aquifers. And there have been a number of investigations showing that this is the truth, but the federal government, three investigations that they were doing specifically in Wyoming, Dimock, Pennsylvania, and in Texas, the government shut down because of the political pressure. Now, there is also a lot of evidence that what happens is that because people's water is contaminated, and you can imagine they're really, really desperate. And we've seen this in a number of states, like in Pennsylvania, when you have purchased your house and your water goes bad, your house is basically valueless. And these companies come in, and sometimes the people in the community sue. Other times, the suit can turn into a settlement. And when there's a settlement, the people sign a disclosure agreement. And we've found this all over the country that, you know, literally thousands of people have signed disclosure agreements, which mean they cannot talk about the company or their experience, or they can be held liable. So that's one of the problems. But there are a number of cases that we know where water pollution absolutely has happened. And that it's very well documented.
Let's talk about the methane leaks aspect of this story. So this is something that the industry really tries to downplay. Methane is a much more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. So you just need a small amount of methane to have the same impact in our atmosphere as a large amount of carbon dioxide. What are we seeing in terms of the impact to our atmosphere of methane coming from fracking?
Well, we know that we need to keep fossil fuels in the ground. It's absolutely irresponsible to continue fracking for oil and gas. And what's happened with methane is, first of all, the EPA's estimates of methane leaks are a vast undercount. The methane leaks all along the production cycle, from when it's drilled and fracked to when it's processed to when it's piped to the facility for use. This is very well documented. So the Obama administration has actually proposed some new methane rules, but of course they're weak. It grandfathers in all of the existing wells and infrastructure. We're also very cynical about the ability of the oil and gas industry, or maybe willingness is a better word, the willingness to spend the money to actually do what it would take to stop methane leaks. And it's very difficult to stop an invisible gas. We're very concerned. First of all, these regulations grandfather in all existing wells and infrastructure. Secondly, the history of the oil and gas industry is not complying with regulations. They look at these fines and Even worker deaths has the cost of doing business. They expect to pay some fines. They have been unwilling to spend money, even around safety issues. So the likelihood of them doing the amount of upfront work to prevent methane leaks is very unlikely. And we shouldn't be drilling all of these new wells to begin with. We shouldn't be investing in another 40 years of infrastructure for natural gas. We should be having a quick transition to renewables and energy efficiency.
Right. So people like President Obama, California Governor Jerry Brown, they tout fracking as a transitional energy source and energy system to renewable energy, which, but at the same time, they have, as you said, invested in having this industry around for decades. And the market has actually been flooded by too much natural gas, which has driven down oil from fracking, which has driven down the price of these energies. Why do you think President Obama and other leaders, liberal leaders, who do not even deny the reality of climate change, why are they so in love with fracking?
Well, I think it's a matter of being in love with fossil fuels, and our whole economic system is really based on the way that we use and abuse energy. And I also think it has to do with the big banks, with Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs now is a larger natural gas trader than Exxon and the other large oil and gas companies. And Exxon is, a huge company, a huge fracker, but Goldman Sachs dominates natural gas trading. So I think when you have these very powerful economic interests pushing natural gas, it's been very difficult for politicians to stand up. And I think politicians of both parties are guilty of not really being serious about any kind of transition. And I mean, the idea that we would invest another 40 years of resources into the infrastructure for natural gas, I mean, it's ludicrous. Renewables have been ready for 2 decades. Energy efficiency technologies are really the direction that we should be going. Doing what we need with energy efficiency creates jobs. It is the cheapest way to replace dirty energy, and it just makes good economic sense.
Now, of course, these energy executives or their friends in government would probably not want to live in the backyard of a fracking operation. Tell us about the experience you had in researching your book of what it is like for ordinary Americans who are living with fracking in their communities, with these huge industrial operations that they can smell, that they can see when they turn on their faucets, that they have to fight, every single day. What is it like to live in the backyard of fracking?
The impacted people on the front lines, they are really living in horrible sacrifice zones. They have to put up with not only their water being potentially polluted, but with all of the chemical and air pollution that comes from processing facilities.
Right, we didn't even talk about air pollution. We talked about groundwater, but you're right, the air is also polluted from these
Right,
operations.
massive air pollution with chemicals like benzene in the air, ozone that destroys lung tissues. The lifestyle, like quality of life issues that comes when you live in a fracking zone. Thousands of trucks, giant trucks, transversing the highways, ruining the roads in these small communities, all sorts of dangerous accidents, spills of the chemicals. We even found in a report that we did at Food and Water Watch that there is not only a rise in violent crime. In fact, women suffer from more abuse in these communities because, you know, the fracking industry brings in lots of young men who do this work. They make pretty good wages and they have free time on their hands. And there's some degree of drinking at bars and that types of things. And so in a community like North Dakota, which has had a huge influx of fracking workers, there's been a rise in rapes and those types of...
Wow.
And also venereal disease. And we actually did a report that looked at the stats. I mean, this isn't something we just made up. We looked at some of the statistics in Pennsylvania comparing fracked counties to non-fracked counties. So, you know, the oil and gas industry always has a boom-bust cycle. A lot of these problems have occurred before when oil drilling was done in new communities. And this is just not a place that you want to live, not to mention all of the health effects. I mean, people suffer from a range of from diseases, bloody nose, intestinal problems, many, many health effects. And if you're looking at a state like Pennsylvania, where Pennsylvania is almost like a big experiment, that's where a lot of the fracking took place early on, and the health department actually had a list of words, and if people called asking for help on this, they had to go to a supervisor at the health department, and then they weren't helped. I mean, a lot of this has come to light in the years since so many problems have happened in Pennsylvania.
Winona, let's talk about the bright side of this story, which is how amazingly people have risen up. You brought up Pennsylvania. We just heard the news recently that a small town in Pennsylvania that has been fighting fracking, Grant Township, actually legalized civil disobedience on the issue of fracking, so that when they go out and they confront the companies in their community, that they don't get to be arrested anymore, and that they can now legally protest this, even if it means, you know, blocking roads, etc. And then, of course, the huge victory in New York State. Tell us about how people have been rising up against fracking.
Well, you know, I think the New York State example is a really good one. There were many local groups fighting fracking, and it was really a lot of the momentum for the movement started in Pennsylvania and New York. And I know Food and Water Watch began working with many of these activists, learning about what fracking was, and we became the first national group to call for a ban on fracking. These local groups were already calling for a ban on fracking. And a number of us got together and we formed a coalition, New Yorkers Against Fracking, with the goal of making Governor Cuomo actually ban fracking. And this was a really powerful movement with literally thousands of people commenting to the Department of Health, going to events, going to demonstrations, bird-dogging Governor Cuomo. He actually could not go anywhere without fracking activists showing up. And this was a several-year campaign, and the whole process of campaigning was also a way to educate the public, because most people are more people supported fracking in New York than were against it when this campaign really got underway. And by the end, public opinion had turned. And now nationally, public opinion has turned, and there are more people concerned and opposing fracking than for it. And I think that the real success of this national, in fact, international movement, but we can see the success right here in the presidential election, where in some states, for the Democratic presidential nomination, we had Bernie talking about being against fracking, and that made Hillary have to skate closer to being against fracking. So it became part of the national debate. And that's what we need to do with our political issue.
Now, one of the things, Winona, that you brought up in your book that was surprising is that there are environmental groups that do still see fracking in a positive light, and that have in a way lent legitimacy to this controversial method of fossil fuel extraction. First of all, who are these organizations? And secondly, are they changing their tune as well or sticking to their guns? Because this seems to be a very destructive approach to tackling the climate.
Well, you know, I think if we look over the last three decades, we can see that some segments of the environmental movement have become so beaten down that they don't have the vision to really push for what people want. They're stuck in this what's politically possible. And we've seen that with energy policy, and we've seen energy funders that fund some of the big environmental groups really supporting this idea that natural gas is a transition fuel. And I think that the group, the environmental group that has the poorest record on this has been the Environmental Defense Fund, which prides itself in working closely with the industry, many different industries, depending on which issue that we're talking about. And they have really run interference for the oil and gas industry and have, in the beginning, done a lot of damage. I mean, I think people are becoming more and more familiar with this problem of having a big environmental group that is closely tied to financial services interests, which Environmental Defense Fund is, promoting technologies and the whole idea that we aren't ready to transition to renewables and energy efficiency. And I think what we really need is for environmental organizations to start holding policymakers, our elected officials, accountable, and to demand that we keep fossil fuels in the ground. And, you know, we were told by many mainstream environmental groups, our movement in places like New York, oh, you can never ban fracking here. You know, we have to strive harder. We have to have a bigger vision. We have to demand more. And we now have about 10 years to make the changes that need to be made to avert some of the worst of climate chaos. And I think we have a moral responsibility for future generations to really demand an end to fossil fuels. Forget all of these policy mechanisms and schemes, the trading schemes, you know, depending on carbon taxes. We need to say no to fossil fuels, and we need to do what we did to put the man on the moon, right? Think about all of the resources.
Right, when we've wanted it bad enough, we've been able to do whatever we need to.
Right, and we in the public interest don't have to have the whole plan. What we need to do is to push our government, our elected leaders, to step forth and to really put the resources into doing what we need to do. And we have a big battle ahead of us, but I'm really encouraged by all of the young leadership we see during this political season, even with all of the dangers ahead. But we have a lot of young people stepping forward and challenging the status quo. And that's what we're going to need to do to keep fossil fuels in the ground.
Winona, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website for Food and Water Watch.
Food and Water Watch's website is www.foodandwaterwatch.org.
And we'll post that to our website later today. Winona, thank you so much for everything that you do and for spending this time with us.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it.
My guest is Winona Hauter. She is an author and activist, founder and executive director of Food and Water Watch. Her earlier book was entitled Foodopoly, The Battle Over the Future of Food and Farming in America. We've just been discussing her new book, Fracopoly, the battle for the future of energy and the environment. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.